with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, a minute past 6 p.m. in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, the frigid, frozen Eastern Standard Time Zone. And let's see. Hey, it's a balmy 56 degrees here in the studio. I got my Stormy Cromer on my head. Got a little bit of Polartec fleece going on, a little bit of a down jacket on top of that. Should be okay for the next 3 hours. Hot diggity. Yes, this is live. That's why I'm referencing the temperature. This is the 8th day of January 2015, and it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we're in a, as thorns go, we're in a briar patch. We will be busy this evening. Of course, this is Conversation Radio, and how busy we are has a lot to do with how much you want to discuss. Because unlike ever so many programs, this is not an ego-driven program in which you are expected to be exactly on target with everything I want to talk about. Of course, you also will not have to worry about listening to any right-wing jackasses on this program. We don't do right-wing jackass here. We like to have a nice, peaceful, calm, pleasant discussion, absent all the screaming and carrying on and wrestling and theater that entails. Yes, indeed. You're welcome to jump into the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. Folks wandering in even as we speak. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, John. Good evening, Will from Chicago. And good evening to our longtime veteran, indefatigable chat room moderator, Lottie. I imagine Sparky will be along presently. Yes, yes. We try to keep this all going through listener contributions, and we find ourselves on this Thorn in the Side Thursday down a bit. I want to send out thanks at the very beginning of here to Ryan. Thank you very kindly, Ryan, for getting us started even before the program did this evening. We finished last night facing a $295 shortfall, and a little bit earlier today, Ryan remedied that and took it from $295 down to $285. So that's considerably better. And thank you very kindly, Ryan, for getting us started. So anybody wanting to stand with Ryan, shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm, however you prefer it. Well, the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. And at $10 a piece, 10 at $28 a piece, 14 at 20, 1 at 285, 2 at 147, no, 142.50, and however else the cipher and the gazentas work out. That's how we keep this all going, because there are no ads. There are no pitches. There are no exhortations for you to purchase herbal baldness cures. Nobody's going to ask you to buy a vacuum cleaner that can pick up a bowling ball and drop it on a mattress made of NASA materials and Swedish design while listening to your Bose Wave radio that sits upon a floor from some flooring company in a building from General Steel. Eesh. No, none of that's going to happen. We keep going as long as you decide that this is worth having. As long as you decide that it's worth keeping going. Yeah, that may, yeah, right, exactly. So, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Where to begin? Well, as I mentioned yesterday, when I saw the news breaking of the attack in Paris, I began to spontaneously and uncontrollably cringe, because I knew that in short order, things would get ugly among the right wing, and yay, verily, they have. Had a little bit of it last night. You heard the Fox Bunch. Well, it ramped up a little bit more today. I noticed this via a post from our friend Aaron. Over at Forward Progressives. ForwardProgressives.com. It appears, it seems, that, well, doing what priests and popes do, Aaron Nanasi points out that today, Pope Frank performed the miracle of the Mass, and along the way mentioned that the Mass would be inclusive of prayers for the victims and their families and the suffering and the grieving from the butchery, the horror that was perpetrated in Paris. Vatican Radio announced Pope Francis offered prayers on Thursday morning, especially for the victims of the deadly terror attack on the Charlie Hebdo satirical review in Paris on Wednesday. Speaking during daily mass in the chapel of the Santa Maria residence in the Vatican, the Holy Father said, "The terror attack in Paris brings to mind so much cruelty, human cruelty, so much terrorism, both isolated terrorism and of state terrorism." Whatever could that possibly mean? He went on and lamented how much cruelty is man capable. And then continued saying, "We pray in this Mass for the victims of this cruelty, so many of them. And we pray also for the perpetrators of such cruelty, that the Lord might change their heart." And I bring this story to your attention because we really didn't get a complete prayer meeting Wednesday in yesterday. And somehow or another, it seems to me that this fits. This works. It makes sense that we would discuss this. You heard that last part. "We pray also for the perpetrators of such cruelty, that the Lord might change their heart." I remember a long time ago that a Christian friend of mine had a sign up in his business that said, "May those who love us, and may those who do not love and those who do not love us may God change their hearts." No, may God turn their hearts. "And if He cannot turn their hearts, may He turn their ankles, that we may know them by their limping." Well, this isn't that. This was straight up Pope Frank saying, "Well, here I am, Pope, Vicar of Christ on earth, practitioner of a religious dogma that says I gotta love everybody, gotta forgive everybody, got to pray for everybody. Everybody's a child of God. Everybody is amenable to the, everybody is at least open or eligible for the grace of Christ Jesus from the blood shed upon the cross. Not that I believe any of that, but that's the way it works. And you got to respect him for living up to his creed. Well, as quickly as that dispatch from Vatican Radio hit the interweb tubes, the right-wing hissy was on. As Aaron Nanasi points out, it made its way over to NBC's Facebook page. And yes, the hissy was on. The hissy was perpetrated, of course, by right-wingers who profess to be Christians. Aaron did a lovely job of wading through the swamp and collected some of the Christian sentiments of right-wingers who apparently missed out on that whole turn the other cheek, love thine enemy business. Of course, we all know that Jesus lifted the love thy enemy business from Socrates, who came up with it at least a couple or 300 years before he was wandering around. But nonetheless, he did espouse the concept that that one should love not only those who love one's, but to love one's enemies. Well, here we go. The Muslims worship a false god, and Allah is a sham. It is not the same God as Yeshua. No, Allah is not the same God as Yeshua. You got to give this particular pencil neck a credit for that. Yeshua is the son of the God that's the same God as Allah and Yahweh, or Yahweh, or Jehovah, or, you know, pick a vowel, because that's the fun part of the language there. You just kind of make up vowels as you go along. Of course, the idea that a perfect deity would take up residence in human flesh is kind of ridiculous to the Muslims, as it is to others. Oddly enough, it wasn't ridiculous to the Greeks, because the Greeks, where Christianity was actually invented, the Greeks had a history of their gods wandering around, turning into swans and bulls and all kinds of stuff just to go and do the nasty with humans. They weren't happy being gods. They had to come down and, you know, get a little human once in a while. That's how you wind up with demigods like, Hercules, Heracles, the guy from Brad Pitt played him from the Iliad. Yeah. My God, what happened to that brain cell? Come on, a little help. I must be tired. Well, I am tired. I'm exhausted. Didn't sleep worth a damn last night. No, not Thor, Gerald. Achilles! God damn, that's pathetic. Achilles. Achilles was Poseidon and a human woman? Or was it Zeus and a human woman? Anyway. So that's why you get Yeshua being God made flesh, because it played well to the Greeks where Christianity was invented, but I'm off track. It is not the same God as Yeshua. They worship demons and practice many sinful and wrong things. Are we really surprised they did this? They freaking behead people, murder Jews, and beat their women. Because you know what? Nobody else on planet Earth has ever beheaded people, murdered Jews, or beaten their women. Mm-mm. I mean, that's why there's rules about what you need to do if you want to beat your woman in the Old Testament. And I seem to recall that there are some preserved ruins throughout Central Europe with names like Dachau and Birkenau and Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen and Sobibor, from where there was a little Jew murdering going on. Curiously, not perpetrated by Muslims, but rather perpetrated by Christians who wore belt plates that said, Gott mit uns. I haven't said the magic word. It doesn't matter if you had 614. And then we've also, of course, discussed the whole beheading people thing. The English had a taste for it. The French had a taste for it. The Spanish had it. Pretty much all of Europe had a taste for beheading because, well, it's effective. I mean, when you're really, really, really kind of bent on making your enemies go away, chopping their heads off, well, it works real good. Not to mention the fact that the example was set of head lopping by a little shepherd kid in the Old Testament named David, who lopped the head off of a big old Philistine named Goliath after he chucked a rock betwixt his eyes. And then there's Salome. Was it Salome? Bring me the head of John the Baptist. Yeah, there's that too. Oddly enough, I don't think those were Muslims either. Right. So there's that. Let's see. Pray they capture them alive and remove each of their digits one by one, and then their eyes, and then their limbs, and televise the whole thing, screams and all. Torture them extremely as a deterrent. That is my prayer. Sounds rather like the correspondent there is praying to somebody besides Jesus. Because if he was really listening to him, you got to know that one went up and he went, what? Have you even read the books that are about me? You really? That's what you're praying for? Hey, Dad, can I go back on duty with the NFL? I liked it a lot better when I was helping them catch passes on the crossing route. It's easier to blow their brains out than we can all be judged when we get. Then we can all be judged when we get to heaven, buddy. You're not going to heaven, at least not according to the book that you follow. No. Got a lot of hate in your heart, there, pal. So the Pope is praying for the gunman. Why should this surprise us? The church has been tolerating pedophiles for quite some time. Why not terrorists, too? Shh. According to Christianity, you're supposed to pray for the pedophiles. Here's where it gets really gross. You're supposed to forgive them, too. Mm-hmm. Yep. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. That's actually a kind of a legalistic statement there. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. That means forgive us, God, for the wrong things that we do in your sight to the same degree and in the same amount that we are willing to forgive people who wrong us. In other words, you don't forgive people. You know, guy inadvertently, you know, elbows you in the ribs on the way off the subway car or something. If you don't forgive him, you're going to be missing out one coming from God. Not this guy. Kind of makes you wonder which kind of Christian. I don't think they are Christians, do you? Not that I'm one. This is a Christianity problem. This is not a Bob problem. I'm not going to be associated with any religion that has the likes of these for followers. Yeah, Devin, I think you're right. They're praying to that priest from Indiana, Jones in the Temple of Doom. Kalimar! Kalimar! Oh, what does he say when he's making the hearts pop out of the chest? I never can remember that. I try not to remember that because it's not really something that I want to know any more than I'm prone to saying Beetlejuice three times in any given program. Beetlejuice. Hope you don't make me say it a third time, Beetlejuice. Oh, nowhere to be seen. Here's a choice one, courtesy of Aaron Nanasi. I am not scared. I'm an American, well armed and trained to take out the trash of this world. Carry 24/7. Not exactly sure what it is this trained person is carrying, but I guess we're going to have to assume they mean firearms. Yeah, I'm not scared. Yeah, so this person, I guess, feels free to draw whatever cartoon he or she wants and publish it, and ain't scared of nothing. Uh-huh. And then, of course, this is just charming stuff, really. This guy is an anti-pope. He is an imposter. There can only be one pope alive at once. He is a fraud. Yeah. There can be only one. Is that not right, Ramirez? Yeah. Actually, there have been at least a couple of occasions where there have been multiple popes at one time. But that's a matter of learning history, and we all know that history doesn't particularly appeal to these folks. And then it looks like the frustration setting in. Oh, Pope, you were doing well there for a while. Yeah, wait till he delivers the climate change speech. That's going to be a Lulu. And finally, struggling to comprehend that the Pope wants to be compassionate to those monstrous barbarians. I think that last one you could almost read in a Homer Simpson voice. Monstrous barbarians! So, you know, the loving followers of the Prince of Peace. But the guy really is following his own religion. He's following the teachers of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi. Because he says there, forgive your enemies. And I think there's a fragment there because one of the disciples actually probably said, what? And Yeshua says, did I stutter? So run on over to forwardprogressives.com. Read the whole article. Pope Francis prays for Paris gunmen. Conservative Christians are outraged. And they are. Naturally, no one is surprised. I mean, I'm not. Are you? On the subject of headlopping, Ron and Raleigh writes, the right in France is ready to dust off the guillotine as of the incident yesterday. Oh, yeah, the right-wing fascist nationalists in France are,
It is les Muslims.
And I heard it actually said that the right wing in France may be the greatest benefactor of this murder. Kate on the front range in sub-zero wind noting, I'm so tired of this story. We're all going to die. 12 people. Pity. There are thousands streaming out of Syria on ghost ships. Bombing and terror happening all over the planet. What about this story that's inflamed the media and churches? 12 people. Kate says, by the way, Radio Rwanda always gives me a twinge. It sounds racist to me and refers to the bloody history of that country. Things have changed over the years. 64% of their governing body are women. How progressive is that? Could we find another way to refer to Fox? Well, we're not referring to Fox because of the present Rwanda. We are referring to the fact that, like Fox, Radio Rwanda, during the horror there that encompassed far more than 12 people, Radio Rwanda was complicit in whipping up the homicidal mania, just as Fox News TV radio is daily bent on whipping up a right-wing homicidal mania in this country. So no, there is no racial overtone to it whatsoever. They are merely serving the same bloodthirsty propagandistic purpose. Kate adds, my room is 60 degrees, so I am 1 degree above you, grin. Nothing more to say today, at least nothing that is socially acceptable. Happy birthday to Elvis, my sister, and Johnny Carson. Signed, Kate, in sub-zero wind. January 8th. There we are. Yep. Indeed, indeed. Okay, let's get away from Paris for a little bit. I think we can do that. Let's go instead to Quincy, Washington, and let us consider the story of a substitute teacher there by the name of Ken Lacey. The story goes back to December the 12th, 2014. It is the story of an 11-year-old girl A shy 11-year-old girl. People sometimes are shy, and it's okay to be shy. There are ways to gently coax them out of their shells. Well, substitute teacher Ken Lacey in Quincy, Washington, according to Olga Montano, the mother of the 11-year-old girl, he requested that the 11-year-old child come to the front of the class. The little girl refused to go to the front of the class and told substitute teacher Ken Lacey that she was embarrassed. At which point in time, substitute teacher Ken Lacey said, I'll show you what's embarrassed. You know it's not going to end well when you hear something like that, don't we? That's when he told four of her classmates to grab her, 11 years old, and drag her to the front of the class. Now, what was that right-wing comment from the story about the Pope praying for the perpetrators of the horror, saying them Muslims beat their women? I'm guessing substitute teacher Ken Lacey is probably not a Muslim. Might very well be, in fact, be a Christian. So the four kids went and they grabbed the 11-year-old little girl and proceeded and began to drag her to the front of the class. And it looked like such good fun that her, others of her classmates got in on it too. And in the course of dragging her to the front of the class so that substitute teacher Ken Lacey could show her what's embarrassed, they slapped her, her classmates kicked her, her classmates punched her in the face. The police have apparently not put substitute teacher Ken Lacey in a chokehold or shot him or crushed him or done anything to him. An investigation is pending. And substitute teacher Ken Lacey, as of Monday, was permitted to resign from substitute teaching in the Quincy School District. Eleven years old, smack dab in the middle, but pretty much past the beginnings and well into preteen adolescence, arguably one of the hardest periods of human development of which we are aware. And this 11-year-old child was the victim of mob action inside a public school instigated by an adult. Now, how long will this child deal with the after effects? How much counseling will be required? How about medication? Do you think medication might be required? And to what end? Why might the child have been embarrassed? Why did her classmates find it so easy to jump in on the event, slap her, punch her in the face, and kick her? Think maybe she knew better than the substitute teacher did? Sounds like it. And, you know, hint, again, a reminder, this didn't happen in Kuwait or Saudi Arabia or Qatar or the United Arab Emirates or Iran or Iraq or Syria or Lebanon. Mm-mm. This happened in the new United States of America. Thank God Washington State hasn't allowed teachers to carry guns yet. Otherwise, he might have just pistol-whipped her a little while. Yeah. That's why we call this Thorn in the Side Thursday. So is it just, is it no harm, no foul? Oh, well, he's resigned. He won't be substitute teaching her anymore. Everything's okay now. Is it? Really? We feel quite certain about that, that it's okay now? Because I don't feel so certain. Tim from L.A. with an email. Subject line, it's terrorism. Or is it? I was listening to my local Pacifica station, and there was a roundtable on the attack in Paris. One of the people said that the three who allegedly killed the 12 people were weak because they did not have a sense of humor when the Prophet Muhammad was made fun of. These terrorists do not reflect the mass majority of Muslims who can brush off jokes as silliness. Those who are offended, though, can create dialogue. So true, Tim says. Which reminds me of the story you told us about of the anatomically correct chocolate Jesus. Though offensive to many, probably, as you said, the chocolate was brown and not white, many in the Christian sphere were offended, but this helped create dialogue. Even Piss Christ did the same, yet a minority of the chocolate Jesus protesters committed a crime after Bill Donahue, head of the Watchdog Catholic League, said it was one of the worst assaults on Christian sensibilities ever. It's not just the ugliness of the portrayal, but the timing. To choose Holy Week is astounding. Huh. So, because it was Holy Week, right? So then I'm sure that Bill Donahue will be condemning this in short order. We have to go to South Carolina stand for this, where they're worried that because of all those sissies who don't want people bringing guns to school, that little South Carolina stand school children are forgetting just how important the Second Amendment Wolverines is. So that's why the state of South Carolina stands legislature has a new bill to consider. Mm-hmm. The God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians there in South Carolina stand want to pass bills in both chambers of the South Carolina legislature that would bring gun rights instruction into classrooms in South Carolina stand. Mm-hmm. This is not a joke. This isn't from The Onion. This is from Greenville Online. They're going to shoehorn it in as civics instruction. Really. Republican state legislators in South Carolina stand, which means almost all of them, have whined. Yeah, I'd say whining. Zero tolerance policies regarding guns at South Carolina schools has led to a backlash against citizens' gun rights and a lack of knowledge on how to safely use bombs. Mm-hmm. In point of fact, the bill creates a state holiday of sorts. Second Amendment Awareness Day. It's going to come December 15th of every year. 10 days before the celebration of the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And every public school in the state is going to have to celebrate Second Amendment Awareness Day. And they're going to have a poster contest and an essay contest. And the poster contest and the essay contest is going to have its subject as the subject, the right to bear arms. One American right protecting all others. See, the right to freedom of religion doesn't protect the right to bear arms. The right of free speech and freedom of assembly doesn't, and freedom of the press, that doesn't protect the right to bear arms. The right to be secure in your persons, papers, and effects. Well, that doesn't protect the right to bear arms. The right to bear arms protects all the other rights. Except that's a load of baloney. Yeah. And every year, in every grade, that's right, I said every grade, precious little South Carolina public school students are going to be subjected to 3 long weeks of firearms rights instruction. Because people in South Carolina stand just don't fully understand that they can go down to the Billy Bob's Bait Shop and Firearms Emporium and buy any old gun that they want to, long as they ain't no felon. And sometimes you can do it if you're a felon, as long as you're willing to lie about not being one. Mm-hmm. Hootie hoot. Representing Alan Clemens, or a pig licking from Myrtle Beach, said, "Zero tolerance policies have squelched any discussion of the Second Amendment in schools." Mm-hmm. I wonder if they're going to teach the controversy. You know, the controversy over whether or not children ought to be bringing firearms to school. Maybe that should be a state's rights issue. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm really cornponing this up, aren't I? Just pisses me off. By the way, anybody, apart from the fact that it's 10 days before the celebration of the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Anybody else got any ideas about December the 15th? Anybody? That date, I mean, maybe that date itself doesn't ring a bell, but maybe sometime around in there rings a bell? Yeah, once they pass this bill, and don't kid yourself, they will pass this bill. Because the NRA wants the bill passed. Hell, the NRA has compiled the school curriculum that these poor children are going to be subjected to for 3 weeks a year, every year of their school, of their secondary school career from kindergarten forward. What in the name of... What in the name of Smith and Wesson do you reckon the firearms instruction curriculum for 3 freaking weeks is going to look like for the kindergartners? See, I remember when we were doing the PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, PRISM program with Dr. Bill, some of the teachers who were participating in it asked serious questions about how do I make primary source-based history real for a third grader? Because James Madison was not known for his monosyllabic writing style. Nor was Alexander Hamilton. That's why Dr. Bill brought in an education specialist by the name of Phil Roden, who was absolutely brilliant in talking about the ways that you can introduce young children to concepts of civics and the study of the American self-government experiment, which one could argue has failed. Well, the NRA has put together a curriculum for everybody from kindergarten. I mean, do they get it at Head Start? This says all grades. Is Head Start a grade? Well, then again, there's a lot of poors that go to Head Start. I mean, Head Start is pretty much for the poors, and by the time they get around to implementing this, it could very well be Head Start won't even exist because freedom. Mm-hmm. Based on a curriculum chosen by the State Department of Education and approved or recommended by the National Rifle Association. Mom's demand action was not consulted in any of this. I'm still waiting. Let me check back to the chat room. Yeah, there we go. There we go. December the 15th, in addition to being 10 short days before the day in which we celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, is also the day after the anniversary of the Sandy Hook Massacre. Mm-hmm. When a young man by the name of Adam Lanza offed Mother Lanza and took a small arsenal down to the school and managed to shoot up a bunch of little first graders so badly that they couldn't hardly be identified by the individual pieces of them that were left laying around. Yeah, that's Sandy Hook. Now, where, you might ask, did Representative Alan Clemens, or Pig Licking from Myrtle Beach, come up with the idea? Well, Greenville Online explains, his idea for the bill came after an incident in a Somerville high school in September this year, past year, where police were notified and an 18-year-old student's locker searched after he wrote a fictional essay that mentioned purchasing a gun to kill his neighbor's pet dinosaur. I don't know how fictional that is. After all, we're talking about South Carolina, where a hell of a lot of people think that Jesus walked with the damn dinosaurs, and there might just be one under somebody's house. Representative Clemens was shocked and offended by the police showing up. In this case, it squelched a student's First Amendment rights in responding to an assignment to talk about the Second Amendment. Sounds to me like he was talking about shooting an imaginary dinosaur. And if you've got a high school student who's out there imagining dinosaurs under his, well, I don't know if maybe the police should have been called so much as maybe the mental health folks. Co-sponsors of the bill are Representing Jerry Smith of Simpsonville. Yeah, he's a Republican. They all are. And Representing Richard Yow! No, really, that's his name. Richard Yow, Pig Licking from Chesterfield. Goddess of Irony was on duty because those two individuals said the Second Amendment deserves to be studied more in South Carolina Stan than the other amendments does because the Second Amendment is a linchpin. Yes, they use the word linchpin, which includes the word lynch. In the state of South Carolina. Old times there are not forgotten. Not happy with having 3 weeks of instruction done on a curriculum along the lines of a curriculum approved by the NRA and developed by them too. No, there's another bill in the pre-filed for the South Carolina State Legislature that would offer a 4-credit course for Cherens to go and learn how to shoot guns. They'd be bussed away from the school down to Billy Joe Bob's bait ranch and shooting range, and they'd be taught there how to use guns. And get taught about the gun rights. State Senator Lee Bright, Goddess of Irony, remember, she's on the job, she never sleeps. State Senator Not So Bright said that the gun safety courses, it's like we give driver's education courses. We got to protect gun rights, Senator Not So Bright said. We got to expand gun rights. because everybody knows that South Carolina Stand Public Schools are among the finest in the nation. Go read Pat Conroy's The Water is Wide. The Second Amendment is the linchpin. Because, see, the First Amendment's not. Because you can say anything you want to in America unless you want to say something bad about guns. And then we'll take our Second Amendment remedies and you won't be saying shit about guns no more. Wolverines! Yeah, Irish Dave understands. See, there's the problem right there. Without the Second Commandment, you couldn't use the First Commandment to shout Allahu Akbar in the crowded theater. Mm-hmm. Ron and Raleigh with a query. Do you think they'll teach about how Southern states wanted the Second Amendment so they could have those armed slave-catching militias to hunt down their runaway property? No! No! And never will be heard a discouraging word. And the skies will be gunny all day. Like I said, it's a briar patch tonight. When we get the conversation radio part of all this started up real good, I'd love to have your thoughts. What does 3 weeks of kindergarten instruction in the Second Amendment and gun rights look like? And I'm not going to suggest any of my own thoughts. I welcome you to share yours. Got to be interesting. And just wrapping up the filibobster, I wanted to share something with you from that wonderful website, Letters of Note. Letters of Note shares correspondence from famous people on significant topics. First time Letters of Note ever came to our attention, it was via Dr. John, I believe, who pointed out a letter that had been sent by a former slave to his old master. And I think it remains probably the one item that has had more hits than any other at the site. But this one seems to be on point. It is from the Prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. We will go out and sacrifice a burnt offering of a rubber chicken in his memory after the program. He had recently been on BBC Four back in 1993 with a special called Bill Hicks Revelations. An outraged Christian minister, priest person, wrote to BBC demanding that the broadcast be suppressed. The BBC kindly provided the complaint to the Prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. Who took it upon himself to respond personally to the offended priest The letter is dated the 8th of June, 1993. He writes... just 1 second. Sometimes the computer misbehaves. Dear sir, after reading your letter expressing your concerns regarding my special revelations, I felt duty-bound to respond to you myself in hopes of clarifying my position on the points you brought up. And perhaps enlighten you as to who I really am. Where I come from, America, there exists this wacky concept called freedom of speech, which many people feel is one of the paramount achievements in mankind's mental development. I myself am a strong supporter of the right of freedom of speech, as I'm sure most people would be if they truly understood the concept. Freedom of speech means you support the right of people to say exactly those ideas which you do not agree with. Otherwise, you don't believe in freedom of speech, but rather only those ideas which you believe to be acceptably stated. Seeing as how there are so many different beliefs in the world, and as it would be virtually impossible for all of us to agree on any one belief, you may begin to realize just how important an idea like freedom of speech really is. The idea basically states, while I don't agree or care for what you're saying, I do support your right to say it, for herein lies true freedom. You say you found my material offensive and blasphemous. I find it interesting that you feel your beliefs are denigrated or threatened, when I'd be willing to bet you've never received a single letter complaining about your beliefs or asking why they are allowed to be. If you have received such a letter, it definitely did not come from me. Furthermore, I imagine a quick perusal of an average week of television programming would reveal many more shows of a religious nature than one of my shows, which are called specials by virtue of the fact that they are very rarely on. All I'm doing in Revelations is giving my point of view and my language based on my experiences, much the same way religious broadcasters might organize their programs. While I've found many of the religious shows I've viewed over the years not to be to my liking, or in line with my own beliefs, I've never considered it my place to exert any greater type of censorship than changing the channel, or better yet, turning off the TV completely. Now for the part of your letter I found most disturbing. In support of your position of outrage, you posit the hypothetical scenario regarding the possibly angry reaction of Muslims to material they might find similarly offensive. Here's my question to you. Are you tacitly condoning the violent terrorism of a handful of thugs to whom the idea of freedom of speech and tolerance is perhaps as foreign as Christ's message itself? If you are somehow implying that their intolerance to contrary beliefs is justifiable, admirable, or perhaps even preferable to one of acceptance and forgiveness, then I wonder what your true beliefs really are. If you had watched my entire show, you would have noticed in my summation of my beliefs the fervent plea to the governments of the world to spend less money on the machinery of war and more on feeding, clothing, and educating the poor and needy of the world, a not-so-unchristian sentiment at that. Ultimately, the message in my material is a call for understanding rather than ignorance, peace rather than war, forgiveness rather than condemnation, and love rather than fear. While this message may have understandably been lost on your ears due to my presentation, I assure you the thousands of people I played to in my tours of the United Kingdom got it. I hope I helped answer some of your questions. Also, I hope you consider this an invitation to keep open the lines of communication. Please feel free to contact me personally with comments, thoughts, or questions if you so choose. If not, I invite you to enjoy my two upcoming specials entitled Mohammed the Twit and Buddha, You Fat Pig. Paren, underline, all caps, joke! Sincerely, Bill Hicks. And that really is pretty much what it's all about, isn't it? Yeah. Truly. Now a moment of Hicks. I hope.
But you know, there's a living God who will talk directly fucking to you.
Someone not through the pages of the Bible that forgot to mention dinosaurs.
Be upon him indeed. So here we are, 2 minutes past the hour. The filibobster for this evening is pretty much concluded. I can filibobster some more if you wish, but the phone lines are open, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And, of course, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is how you contact the program. If you've never sent a contact request before, just simply do that, and we will be engaging in conversation before you know it. We are still trying to raise $285 this evening. No one has stepped up with Ryan so far this evening. Thanks very much for all the help we have received this week. Trying not to get in a hole and struggling to, well, you know, so do what you wish. We'll take a break, and when we come back, maybe your calls, or hell, maybe more filibobster. Who knows? We also have the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to that on Thursdays. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
When you go on gambling drifts, you're stuck right out in nature. Foraging the forest like a primate. Using chopping tools instead of hot plates. Supposed to show you're not a wild beast. You can hear the noises at night time. They don't have to keep a certain bedtime. In the shapes of my body, laugh over parts on the edge.
come back from the ice cage. Alive and beating, fit inside a zoo cage.
It's Thursday, January 8th, 2015.
We're going to build a rail network that will connect 80% of Americans to high-speed rail in 25 years.
America's first high-speed rail line breaks ground.
I will not be running for the Senate in 2016.
The environment to lose another champion in the Senate.
It's not a matter of if it'll happen again, but when.
More tank problems 1 year after West Virginia toxic chemical spill. Fracking industry causes more quakes in Ohio and Texas. Plus,
we must demonstrate that reducing carbon is compatible with an abundant economy and human well-being.
The Golden State invests big time in the new green economy.
All of those big time stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It's easier to believe in a benevolent God, the baby Jesus, than it is in some kind of theory about a global warming.
Yes, it's just easier, Bill O'Reilly, to believe in a 2,000-year-old story about the virgin birth of the Son of God than it is to believe in thousands of scientists and their independently verifiable data. Welcome to the No Spin Zone. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, first up, I want to welcome the GNR's newest affiliate partner, the Dave Johnson Rocks Show on killradio.org.
Yay, Dave Johnson, you rock.
Dave broadcasts from out here in Los Angeles. And speaking of Los Angeles, is it my imagination or do you have a whole bunch of California stories in today's report?
Oh, my gosh, yes, we do. As we go to air, California Senator Barbara Boxer, champion of the environment and public health, has announced she will not seek re-election.
That's going to be disappointing news, I know, to a lot of environmentalists. Boxer had led the U.S. Senate Environment Committee until it was recently taken over by James Inhofe. He, America's foremost climate denier, who believes
the notion that man-made gases cause global warming is probably the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people.
So is that bad news for the environment?
Well, it isn't the greatest news, but she's done decades of work for the environment, and she says she will continue to work for sane climate policy in California and the nation.
And she'll still be serving in the Senate for 2 more years, so there's that.
Also in California.
Who wants to drive anyways? Take a train! Who wants to fly anyways? Take a train!
California began construction on America's first true high-speed rail line. At the official groundbreaking ceremony in Fresno on Tuesday, Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Gina McCarthy said the new rail line between L.A. and San Francisco will slash air pollution costs and emissions, and it's only the beginning.
We're going to build a rail network that will connect 80% of Americans to high-speed rail in 25 years. That's the goal.
And that's a big goal. Is that new? 80% of America connected in 25 years by high-speed rail?
It's the first time I've heard a federal official state it that clearly and that bluntly.
Wow. Good news indeed.
Meanwhile, in fossil fuels, yet another study confirms that 77 earthquakes in Ohio were caused by the fracking industry, using deep underground injection wells to permanently store toxic fracking wastewater, and that causes dormant earthquake faults to slip. In Texas, officials are examining now whether fracking is the cause of 11 earthquakes that hit the North Texas city of Irving over a 24-hour period this week.
Of course it is. What else could it be?
Yeah, it's going to be fracking.
I wonder if fracking caused volcanoes. They would ignore that, too. It's just amazing to me.
This week also marks 1 year since a toxic coal chemical spill contaminated the drinking water supply of the city of Charlottesville, West Virginia.
Including about 300,000 residents.
Yes. Officials with the state's Department of Environmental Protection say a new survey indicates now that over 1,000 similar above-ground storage tanks in the state are, quote, not fit for service.
What could possibly go wrong?
Finally, back to California.
California, as it is done in many areas, must show the way. We must demonstrate that reducing carbon is compatible with an abundant economy and human well-being.
California Governor Jerry Brown, at the inauguration for his fourth and final term on Monday, unveiled an ambitious roadmap for California's clean energy future. He set out a goal for California to get 50% of its electricity from renewable energy sources by 2030, cut gasoline consumption by 50%, and double energy efficiency in buildings. And he wants to do that all in 15 years.
This is exciting. It's bold. It's absolutely necessary if we are to have any chance of stopping potentially catastrophic changes to our climate system.
Way to go, California. I'm proud to live here. For much more on that story and all the other ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. If you have any spare change left over after the holidays, we could use your help. Really, stop by and make a donation at greennews.bradblog.com. Thanks in advance. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Put some brand new kinds of thinking in your mind, and you can't go wrong, because you're grooving all day long. California Soul. California Soul.
Okay, I'm just checking. I think Desi said Charlottesville, West Virginia. Honest to God, if we were like a really, really wealthy radio network, I would spring for plane tickets or train tickets or bus fare or whatever, just to bring Brad and Desi here to the hills and hollers and show them the difference between Virginia and West Virginia. Charlottesville is in Virginia. Charlotte is in North Carolina. And, well, there's no Charlottesville in West Virginia that I'm aware of. If there is, it's a post office and not a hell of a lot more than that. I think she meant Charleston. Oh, well. Yeah. This is the Horn. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Plenty of thorns yet to go. Before we go anywhere, though, I want to make sure that I send out thanks both to Mary and to Joyce. Thank you both very, very kindly for jumping in with Ryan and taking a big chunk out of tonight's fundraising. It is tremendously appreciated on behalf of the entire Horn Family Commune congregation, of which you are part, and has taken us down to only $215 to go in fundraising this evening. Thank you, Mary, and thank you, Joyce. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
I hear you, Kevin.
I couldn't find the line. I had it right there on the desk in front of me, and I couldn't pick it up.
Better now?
Tom?
Better now?
Oh, yeah. I hear you better. You hear me okay?
Yeah, gotcha.
Okay. You asked a question about the gun training, and we're wondering what our opinions of that would be. I don't know what it would look like, but I know what it is. Now, brainwashing is what it is.
Oh, I'll take it a step further, Kevin. I think when we're talking about gun training for kindergartners, I think it's child abuse.
That too, and How long, the over-under on how long when you take these kids out to teach them to shoot before an instructor or child gets killed during that instruction?
Oh, now, that thing in Arizona, that was just a one-off, Kevin. That was one. That was a one-in-a-million chance. I mean, that's not going to happen anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Because these are responsible gun owners, Second Amendment, National Rifle Association, certified, purified, inspected, neglected, dejected, and rejected instructors.
Especially the neglected and rejected part. And I would suggest that what it will look like is after 12 years of this instruction, when that first class of kids that has had 12 or 13 years of instruction in air quotes, proper gun safety, I would suggest to you that it will look like, oh, the murder rate and the deaths by gun rate going up exponentially by 150% or so from what it was before we started teaching these kids gun training. There are times I'm 55, and there are times that I am very glad that I am as old as I am. And I am lucky enough, and I say that kind of in quotes too, I am lucky enough not to have children, because I mourn for those of you in the Horn family that have kids and grandkids. Because the world they're fixing to inherit ain't going to be anything like the world we arrived in when we came of age. And it's, you know,
I spend a considerable amount of time worrying about the next generation and the generation after that.
Well, they've got, aside from the stupidity of the people wanting to give them this gun training, you know, that's just one part of that puzzle. The denial of climate change that will affect them directly in the next 25 years. All of those, you know, I could go on with a whole list of things, but, you know, I really worry about your kids, your grandkids. You know, what will life be like for them 25, 30 years from now? And what will it be like for them trying to raise children in that type of environment? Because I don't think I need to be a prophet to predict. You know?
I don't even think you need the busted match with the cracked bottom that says, answer hazy, ask again later.
Yeah. I think the thing would come up with the word bingo on it, you know.
We have a winner.
Yeah. Maybe it more be more like we have a loser and the loser is us. You know, like the old Pogo comic strip, the enemy be us.
And right.
Anyway, I just wanted to offer that. You know, when you were relaying that story to us, I was just transfixed. I was sitting in my chair and just, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't go to the computer. I couldn't turn. I just sat there in amazement as I heard this.
A certain amount of miserable horror. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't mean to set it on the day after the Sandy Hook anniversary, so that every year when the Sandy Hook comes on the day after, little South Carolina school children will be celebrating Maragoon rats. They didn't mean to do that. That was just coincidental because, well, you know, it's coming toward the end of the term, and that's just when we could fit it in.
Yeah, and I think about all those parents of the Sandy Hook kids that were killed and what they will have to endure every year when that anniversary comes up.
Well, the parents can look fondly down to freedom-loving South Carolina Stan and just say, well, you know, our children didn't get chewed into pieces by semi-automatic rifle fire for nothing. Because those little children in South Carolina are learning about freedom.
Yep, and they're going to be the protectors of our freedom. And these idiots' minds, you know, I'm almost beyond speechless. It's what can you say? I mean, you can't even do a good Monday nomination on these people because that's a whole different type of moron. I mean,
no, that's why they're throwing in the side Thursday and not more in Monday.
I don't know. I think thorn in the side isn't exactly what I'm thinking of. Thorn in something else. But anyway, that's all I have to offer because that's really, I just am pretty much left speechless and without words to describe how angry it makes me feel and how the thing that we're talking about with the guy that responded to Bill Hicks and then that story that was before it where the guy was talking about the torture and hate for the Muslims that committed these murders over in France.
Right.
And I'm thinking, doesn't it connect to him at all that the words that Jesus supposedly said about love your neighbor, all those things, doesn't it even remotely connect with them that they're saying something entirely different? And obviously it doesn't, but it just, you know.
Seems like it ought to.
Yeah, you know, just on a very basic human level, very, very basic for them, but on a very basic level, you'd think, gee, they might give thought to it anyway. By the way, what do you think the over-under is on how long it took Alex Jones to scream false flag?
I haven't looked yet.
I've
been afraid, Kevin. I've been afraid.
Graham last night, and it wasn't Alex Jones, but it was some other right-wing moron. It didn't take Mr. Jones long at all to, I'm thinking maybe 10 minutes at most. So, anyway, I'll let you go, Bob, because I really, there's not much more I can add other than anger at this point. So, I'll let you go, and hopefully someone can add to this conversation in a way that is more constructive, because anything I say at this point wouldn't be. It just, you know, that's the best I can say.
So. I understand. I understand completely. Kevin, have yourself a good evening.
You too, Bob.
All right. Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Let's see here. Do I have you, Bill?
Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, a little warmer than you are, but not much.
Oh, I'm toasty. I'm all layered up. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I have a beautiful down jacket and didn't get the pants to go with it because I was I was in my 40s and 50s, I was working outside in all kind of weather, and having been a milkman, I know what it was to be out in the cold. I think the day I finally quit running milk, it was about 13 above zero after I finished my route. And it kind of bothered me because my mother's older brother was ran the deliveries, because his daughter married the owner. He was a teamster. And he went out with a horse and wagon when he was delivering milk. And his daughter Mary's the owner of the dairy. that's how he got a promotion. He'd been the head of a local union, Teamsters Union, which milk drivers were not heavily connected. I had a friend whose father was connected through the racetrack union, and that's as far as I'll go with it. Because you can take the implications from there, the racetrack workers, and, you know, that they were kind of close to that agency, that area that didn't exist, that J.J. Edgar Hoover said didn't exist.
Yes, yes.
Are you familiar with the Appalachian thing? Where there's a highway patrolman surprised a meeting in the mountains and the Appalachians in New York State.
Yes, yes, yes.
It was a meeting of guys with, you know, beautiful haircuts, expensive suits, and the guys standing outside watching the Cadillacs and Lincolns, they all wore nice pointed toe shoes and the kind that I used to have. Don't get old, Bob. I'm trying to think of the rail yard, that rail line is being built.
Oh, yeah, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, exactly.
Yeah, who framed? What was the... That was the death of some inner urbans in California.
Right.
What was the name of that company? It was a big orange...
No, in the movie it's referred to as the Red Car.
Oh, Red Car, yeah, it could have been red, yeah. It was a big... Because we had a huge system of electric interurbans in the 20s. You could board a car in Cleveland and go to Detroit. And when those guys were getting the open country, they were doing 70 or 75 miles an hour in those electric interurbans. And the difference between electric transit and diesel, they fired a guy from Cleveland because he was tilting the bidding on buses to favor GM over two other companies, Mack and Flexible, who built buses. This guy got fired. He went out to California and he built BART out there, the Bay Area Rapid Transit.
Yes.
I have several friends in the Bay Area, musicians and you name it, you know, and they travel by BART tremendous amount of time because electric transit... You know, he's talking about high-speed rail. But then again, the problem with electric transit is how are they generating the power?
And
what are they using to generate the power?
Well, certainly out in California, it's not going to be coal-fired.
No.
There's probably still some nuclear online. There will be hydroelectric. Probably some natural gas, and eventually a boatload of wind and solar.
Yeah. Well, that's what we have to go with, wind and solar.
It's our only hope. It really is. And that's kind of the nature of the conversation I was having with Edward last night about Texas fracking and earthquakes. Since it's Texas and since it's oil or gas-based, do they just look at it and say, earthquakes, you know, no big deal. You know, it'd be a big deal if it was caused by anything else, but since it was caused by holy sacred hydrocarbons, well, you know, that's capitalism.
Well, where was the big earthquake in the United States in about 1812 or 14?
That's the New Madrid quake.
Yeah, New Madrid, where the damn Mississippi River was, people said it was flowing backwards. It might have been flowing into a huge hole on the ground.
It flowed backwards. If the area had been populated, there would have been countless deaths. It created Real Foot Lake. That earthquake did. And the thing is, with population being what it is now, if that fault ever does that again anytime soon, it's gonna be awful. Memphis could be wiped off the map. And I can't help but think the fracking the living bejesus out of everything around there is not a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean,
there are a bunch of thieves, Bob. Fractures are thieves.
Well, yeah,
as well as shallow.
Sure. But in point of fact, at the time, that area of western and northwestern Tennessee, and I guess southwest Kentucky, was referred to as the Shakes. Because and there's a lot of marshy, boggy, swampy country, and it was known even back then as being subject to periodic tremors, temblors, quakes, what have you.
Yeah. I haven't heard much of anything happening down there. Or, you know, Bathing Bitty, of course, at New Madrid. But, and you and I, how is Madrid spelled?
Just like Madrid.
I thought, where did the name come from? This country's crazy that way.
Well, remember who first investigated that neck of the woods. It wasn't Americans. New Madrid. It was the Spanish. The French. The French and the Spanish went back and forth over New Orleans, but in point of fact, the Spanish, even though the Louisiana Purchase was purchased from France, the Spanish maintained a considerable amount of influence, and in point of fact, when they heard about the Lewis and Clark expedition, a Spanish expedition was sent out to cut them off and kill them. It just happened to, the timing didn't work out. I think Lewis and Clark got to a point that the Spanish expedition got to maybe a couple of weeks later.
Yeah. Meriwether Clark, I forget the other guy's name.
No, Meriwether Lewis, William Clark.
What?
Meriwether Lewis, William Clark.
Oh, William Clark, okay. See, I mean, that's what happens when you start absorbing too much knowledge. My memory is not really bad, but it's nowhere as good as it once was, as far as recalling names and places. I mean, I would love to be able to get my computer on the international radio, BBC and Paris and, Germany, anybody that broadcasts in English to get what other people are saying, because what we get here is tap. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever they, and some of us, I remember a columnist here did a takeoff on a college football game that was, Poussin U. You know where Poussin is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that name was big when I was a young kid in the early 50s because that was the North Koreans just about drove the UN, United Nations Army, which at that time was primarily American. But other people, there was a Greek contingent, a Turkish contingent, and don't billet those guys close together, Bob.
No. They just don't get on, do they?
No. Well, again, it's the closeness, because the Islamic Empire, the Caliphate, or whatever you want to call it, they were every way as power-hungry and disgusting as the Europeans.
Yeah.
It's a human trait.
Well, but most of the so-called religious violence has been violence done with an overlay or a patina or a veneer of religiosity, but it's all just a power grab.
Power and money. We come back to those two words.
Right.
And then you can run those in a circle. You know, repeat it over and over again, make the circle as big as you want it. Those two words, they are what control everything, it seems to be. I mean, and people get mad at me, well, you support the Korean War. I said, well, the big antagonistic stories the historians have written about the League of Nations, they didn't raise a finger to stop.
The League of Nations was largely powerless because of the fact that a pissed off venal Republican by the name of Henry Cabot Lodge threw a hissy fit and stopped the United States from signing onto it.
The Boston alone would have beaten the card where the Cabot speak only to Lodges and the Lodges speak only to God. I think that's how it went. Maybe I had to see two family names reversed. But one of them ran with Nixon, didn't? Was it Henry Cabot Lodge that ran as Nixon's vice presidential candidate in 1860? I'm old. In the 1960 election. And there was a big scandal about Kennedy in West Virginia.
Oh, you mean... the apocryphal story is that Joe told John, go ahead and buy yourself a few primaries, but I'm not paying for any landslides.
Yeah.
But you mentioned political graft in West Virginia. That moves nicely into a little story that broke here today. The single most corrupt, money-grubbing, ugly, vile, crooked politician who has ever occupied the governor's office of West Virginia shuffled off this mortal coil today. Or yesterday.
Oh, what's that?
Arch Moore, Jr.
Oh, yes.
91 years
old. Not to be confused with Archie Moore, no.
91 years old. This is the man who, when the Buffalo Creek disaster occurred, declared that it was an act of God and the poor put upon coal companies could not be expected to actually take care of their sludge dams. And in point of fact, he insisted on settling the case for pennies upon the thousands of dollars, and the victims of the Buffalo Creek disaster got near nothing. This is the father of the brand new U.S. Senator Shelley Moore Capito, who looks like her daddy wearing a bad wig. And I heard earlier today through the grapevine that a coal company, out of profound respect, a coal company has sent one of its auger devices to the cemetery where Arch will be interred to auger out the hole to put him in because he's too crooked to bury.
Yeah. Oh, I used to love that joke. You had to bury him like a corkscrew. You had to screw him into the ground because they were too crooked. Yeah, exactly. I think I've heard so much nastiness over the years. Bob, the Polish joke was all the rage in the early 60s. The poor Poles, you know?
Right.
How stupid they were. Yeah, how stupid they were. Yeah, how stupid we all were. Immigrants came through Ellis Island, and I couldn't spell their name. He threw a name at them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know how to throw himself. It's very hard to backtrack. So my relatives have gone through to try to find a genealogy. You get across the pond into certain areas, you're not going to know. A buddy of mine lives in the building with me, and he's the guy who first guy to ever get me off a chair to play the damn harp in public. We worked acoustic stuff in those days, and he's Austrian, so we talked, and he's Jewish, and we can spend hours. Me and this guy can spend hours with her. Talking about things that we went through and knew, and because he worked for a black radio station, and he called a fight one time. I think I told you that he called a fight, and his color man was Cassius Marcellus Clay, better known as, I think it was Marcellus Clay, Cassius Clay, better known as Muhammad Ali.
Yep.
He said he went up to the training camp where Muhammad worked in Pennsylvania. And he said, I love that guy. He was just a tremendous person. As I've said a couple of times, I seem to be walking through life, and all of a sudden the guy standing next to me with somebody. I told you I did commercials for that bastard fat man from...
Ailes.
Yeah, for Radio Rwanda. I did two commercials for him, and the commercials were panned because they were so negative. They were supporting William Saxby, who took the Senate seat. And another thing that happened after D&D and Foo, they brought the nurse that was there over here. What the hell was her? I can never remember the woman's name when I'm on the phone, but she was a congresswoman from Geauga County. She inherited her seat after her father died, and he took her husband, and she took the seat. And this nurse made a speech in front of Congress, and they were transporting wounded people from the Indochina battlefield. They called Indochina, not to confuse it with Vietnam War, and they called it Operation Wounded Warrior. That was a long time before we started using that term here.
Started wearing out that term, yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let me open this line up to this call's coming and stay out of trouble. I don't know how to stay warm. I was burning a propane heater in this one place I lived because my friend had trouble with his radiator system and he didn't want to spend the money to fix it. It's like, man, how are you supposed to live in this kind of weather without heat? And I remember working outside, but I had a salamander heater going to keep my hands warm. I changed an oil pump and a distributor, the line that went from the oil pump up to close and open the points, you know, to turn the distributor cam. And I learned a lot that way in the old days with cars. Now you can't even do that stuff. Now they made it so the only thing you can do to fix your car is go to the place and give the guy the keys and bend over on the way out, you know? Anyway, stay out of trouble.
All right. You take care, Bill. We'll talk to you soon.
Try to stay warm, buddy. Take care.
All right. Bye now. Yeah, try to stay warm is a real thing, at least around here these days. that room was 39 degrees when I woke up this morning. Not kidding. Let's see. Let's go over to the Skype line. Will is with us. Hey, Will.
Happy New Year, Bob.
Happy New Year, Will.
Yep.
Good to hear from you.
I'm doing much better. The whole eye infection thing that I posted about on Facebook completely cleared up. Just got to go up for a follow-up next month. And I am home because it is bitterly cold. We are looking at minus 25 right here in northwest Indiana, right by the Illinois-Chicago border. So schools are closing for a third day in a row.
You can't ask children to stand out waiting for a bus in that.
No, or walk. As many kids walk 5 or 6 blocks. So when you add blowing and drifting snow to that, it's just too dangerous. I haven't seen many people out. One person shoveling snow, and one of my neighbors had briefly let his dog out, who was, of course, excited to see me. Which is, of course, the good news leading into the bad news. Bob, I hate to tell you, during the show, I decided to check out Mother Jones. I think I mentioned in the past I post some articles on the Democracy Interactive Facebook page, and guess what? The Charlie Hebdo truthers are already out there.
Oh, I have no doubt. I just haven't had the stomach for looking at it.
Well, as a preview, here's some of the groups being blamed. The International Business Times India published a piece blaming the Israeli spy agency, the Mossad.
Thus, yeah, I saw that yesterday.
Yeah, Angry Indian was... correct. And, of course, Rush Limbaugh is trying to lay this at the feet of President Obama.
Dinesh D'Souza today blamed liberals.
Yes. And why isn't he in prison for his...
See, I haven't figured that part out yet.
Behavior? I mean, good heavens. Are they trying to prove that we are now operating under the old Russian saying there's two types of justice, rich man's justice and poor man's justice. Is better to be rich. I mean, it's ridiculous. The Russian website lifenews.ru had a political analyst suggest the militants were intelligence services from the U.S. And, of course, Laura Ingraham is blaming the French for their principle of multiculturalism, and Eric Bolling on Fox blamed France's immigration policy. Thus, the loons are already proving that there are some people whom, like Mr. Limbaugh, we hope do not contribute to the human gene pool.
Yeah, I'm just grateful for the fact that the guy hasn't reproduced. You're absolutely right, Will.
Right. I mean, mind you, it would be ironic if he had a progeny that turned out to be Carrie Harrison, the gay
son of a Nazi.
Son of a Nazi who's a progressive.
Guy.
Yes. But unfortunately, we have so many problems. The GOP is already claiming to go after the Volcker Rule again, which they failed at. They are targeting the ACA. And
in point of fact, you mentioned the GOP targeting the ACA. Let me see here. Just one second. I've got it right here. The angry Indian. No, it was Isaac. Isaac sent this to me. The House has already taken action. You know, they promised they would. By a 252-172 vote, and I'm checking the date here. This was today. By 252-172, the House voted to change the work requirement for full-time work eligibility for Affordable Care Act coverage from 30 hours to 40 hours.
That's affecting 1.5 million people. Fortunately, the president has said he plans to use his veto pen, and my hope is that the GOP will begin cannibalizing themselves. Not literally, although perhaps that could be a fun event for pay-per-view.
Yeah, but it could also turn loose some sickening prion disease on the population.
True. Let's just have them do it figuratively.
Well, let's take a moment, Will, and just talk about this for a second, if we can.
Sure.
As far as the right wing blaming immigration, France's tolerance for people of different faiths and different ethnicities, you know, France does have problems. Because part of the reason so many people are disaffected is because they have not been enfolded into what is typically considered French society. There is a very, very distinct underclass in France.
Yes, and there's
a really, really ugly ultra-nationalist, right-wing, fascist presence in France. So, you know, those two things are a problem, but in the larger scheme of things, issues of immigration into Europe have been, something that has been a problem to one degree or another for Europe for thousands of years. Yeah. Because by virtue of the fact, you know, we think about the Western Hemisphere and it is longitudinal. Well, Eurasia is latitudinal, and
right,
if you can start walking at the English Channel and eventually wind up at the Pacific Ocean.
Right,
and
yeah,
so
I mean, that's
the vast
Marco Polo essentially did.
Yeah, right. I mean, the vast humanity has gone back and forth across the Eurasian continent for millennia. As I've mentioned before, Caesar's reason for starting the Gallic Wars was the movement of one tribe of Gauls into the lands of another tribe of Gauls, and then there were the and none of these groups were particularly well-defined, but there were the Germans moving, and then there were the Goths and the Visigoths and the Huns. And if you have to figure out a way to get a handle on it, because otherwise the history of Europe is a history of constantly being at war with the latest migrating population. I mean, you yourself being Jewish know the horrors that were perpetrated on Jewish populations throughout the Middle Ages and up into the Renaissance. Periodically, European governments would go mad and insist that, you know, Jews got to leave. Ferdinand and Isabella expelled the Jews and the Moors from Spain, when those groups of people were the ones who taught the Spanish how to quit eating with their toenail clippings.
Right, and sadly we have people who are intolerant. I think if there has to be a need to address the problems of helping immigrants fit in, namely poverty and social acceptance. But I mean, there are groups that have been in Europe for hundreds of years that still feel unwelcome. Ask the Roma, whom many here think of by the name of Gypsy, which I understand they don't especially like, but they face a lot of discrimination as well. So is it any wonder that some small percentage of a group that feels disaffected turns to violence? If you think about it, that seems to be very, very common in human history, and yet we have people who are trying to paint everyone with a broad brush. I mean, you can go to the Huffington Post today, for example, for an article on Muslims condemning the attacks at Charlie Hebdo. And it's just that I hate even thinking of using a broad brush on anyone. Yes, even Republicans. Simply because I see what that broad brush usually does. It seems all the paint in it is the same color, usually, red.
Yeah, red.
And I think that if we want to address these problems, dialogue is important. Dialogue is crucial, much like we have here. And I will say that if people want to continue the dialogue here, Bob could use your support, because unlike a certain Mr. Limbaugh that was mentioned, he does not have millions and millions coming in from monopolies, monopolies being another problem in our society. Instead, he relies on you, the good listener. So feel free to chip in. And, I mean, it's just that some of the attitudes are, in this society and elsewhere, are troubling. For example, the Washington Post ran an article on a new report from the Pew Research Center. The majority of the country's most financially secure citizens, 54% at the very top and 57% just below, believe the poor have it easy because they can get government benefits without doing anything in return. I would like the people with this attitude to live where I'm currently a long-term substitute teacher. Gary, Indiana, a town that has been devastated by the loss of much of its industry. A town that, where literally, most of the schools have something like a 90% plus rating on the number of students who rely on free lunch and breakfasts. Just that what I find perhaps the most depressing thing about this Charlie Hebdo matter after the death is the fact that are those who are seeming to show no compassion. Le Pen's group, I believe it's Marie Le Pen, is trying to make political hay about this and wants to bring back capital punishment. And by the way, capital punishment doesn't seem to really deter people from committing horrific crimes here. I don't think it has.
No, because I don't think, if in fact these two brothers are the perpetrators of this horror, And frankly, if I hear another for-profit media broadcaster refer to this as the brutal murder, or the brutal attack, or listen, let's ditch the adjectives, okay? If you want to call it brutal, call it a brutality, call it a horror, call it a massacre, call it a massacre. But please stop, please Wolf Blitzer, stop with the freaking purple prose, okay? It kind of demeans the situation.
Well, if you're going to go purple prose, please go the H.P. Lovecraft route and throw in lots of adjectives that we haven't heard before, so we can at least run to our dictionaries, or dictionary.com, and learn something.
What I was kind of moving toward is that, if indeed these two brothers did this, they didn't decide to do it thinking, well, you know, France doesn't have the death penalty, so we can kill as many as we want to. Because if the death penalty was a deterrent, the brothers Tsarnaev would not have done what they did in Boston.
Now, and here's the thing, for a fanatic of any sort, political or religious, the death penalty is not a deterrent because they view martyrdom as glorious.
And the larger issue is, how do you have a cultural national dialogue in which you explain to people, to hijack the phrase from the movie Stripes, lighten up, Francis. How do you tell that to people? How do you tell it to Bill Donahue at the Catholic League? How do you explain it to some ultra-Orthodox Jew who refuses to sit next to a woman on an airplane? How do you explain it to people who are being taught perverted versions of whatever Islam is?
Right. And here's the thing, Bob. There are some people whom you can no more reach. If Phil Donahue, an ultra-Orthodox Jew who looks down on women and won't sit next to them, and one of the brothers, Tsarnaev, or let's talk about someone who's now on trial, the head of this ISIS organization, if all of them were confronted with burning bushes and choirs of angels, telling them what part of love your neighbor as you would love yourself did you fail to comprehend, they would not view it as a divine revelation. They would probably call it as a temptation from the forces of darkness. Why? Because to them, their wrath is righteous. However, what we can do is, with dialogue, is reach the large population of undecideds, or those that the fanatics are trying to influence. And this is why it's important for the Horn and like-minded programs and organizations to get the word out there. It isn't easy, but I look at having a dialogue with someone I disagree with as more productive than saying, I am going to inflict my will upon you. Why? Historically, that doesn't work for long, and it usually means that at the end of the day, you are staring at someone in the mirror whom you might not have recognized a few years earlier.
Exactly. And there, you know, there's a larger conversation to be had, too, and I don't want to piss people off when I say this, and I think you will get what I'm getting at, Will. If we're going to say that Charlie Hebdo and you know, me, anybody else who calls out religious bigotry, religious insanity, religious hate, that kind of thing, if we're going to say that it's okay for us to do that, and it is okay for us to do that, then we also have to acknowledge that the other end of the free speech spectrum is going to be balding, middle-aged white guys in Georgia sitting around talking about how to bomb a police checkpoint.
Right.
Or or disaffected brothers in France sitting around trying to figure out how to kill a cartoonist. I mean, they are opposite ends of the same free speech idea. Now, in many cases, we have criminalized the conduct that leads toward violence, especially when they take substantial steps.
Right, and I think that's where you can say, okay, if you are making moves to target someone, this is where it has to end. But here's the thing, as much as there are groups in this country I despise, the KKK, the neo-Nazi movements, and the like, I will support their right to free speech. Why? Because I'm going to try to counter everything they say with all my heart.
And that is exactly, that's exactly where I was going, Will. There is, for anybody who cares to look it up, it should not be difficult to access. There is a famous bit of correspondence in American legal history, and it takes place between two pantheonic jurists in American history. One is Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. The other one is a Native American who rose to the level of an Article III federal judgeship named Learned Hand. And they have an extensive correspondence about what free speech means. And if I recall it correctly, Oliver Wendell Holmes, who was of course an old family connected Brahmin from the Northeast, argues in favor of the suppression of speech and certain forms of speech. Learned Hand, on the other hand, who was, I think he was a federal judge in Chicago, or maybe I'm wrong.
I can Google that question.
He argues that the remedy to bad speech is not to suppress the bad speech. The remedy to bad speech is more speech. Not in terms of shouting people down, but rather showing through the power of argument and the power of conviction showing that one idea is better than the other.
Right, because you have to weigh ideas. This is what the whole point of the debates between our founding fathers were. Adams and Jefferson, Hamilton and Madison had very different ideas in many different areas, but they didn't believe the best way to solve their differences was to take muskets and fire on each other. Instead, they chose to debate, and we are better for their debates.
Right, and they had a belly full of that because the Crown had a taste for suppression.
Exactly, and they knew that essentially making ideas forbidden suppressed any attempts at dialogue whatsoever, as many people gave up. By the way, according to a quick search, Learned Hand was on the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit.
Okay, I was wrong then.
Oh, don't worry. It's a principle that counts, because I believe even when I disagree with someone, I'm going to try to respect them, and hopefully they will respect me as well. And this is what irritates the zealots most. You can take two zealots of opposite sides, and if you lay out their ideas and attitudes one by one on a list, they will line up far more closely with each other than a liberal or a moderate, however you define liberal.
Absolutely true, Will. And that's why I say that it's fortunate for us that there is enough religious hatred between say fundamentalist Christians and fundamentalist Muslims that they never figure out that they've got more in common than they have apart. Hey, you don't like gambling? We don't like gambling. How about that? You don't like drinking? We don't like drinking either. How about dancing? Hate it. We do too. Wait a minute. We got a lot in common. Let's work together. No. But in point of fact, Will, we run a profound risk if we let the right wing get away with this notion that Muslims are the dangerous, or are the only dangerous people on the planet.
No,
because we have an entire nation full of disaffected rednecks, bubbas, birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger eaters, birchers, teabaggers, Klansmen, what have you, Aryan nation, and they are very dangerous.
They are quite dangerous. I don't know if you, if Mike Malloy, ever mentioned this, person he used to work with at, WLS, Jay Marvin. He was on in the 90s before him, and when Jay Marvin went out to Denver for the first time where he lives now, a police officer died protecting him from a group of neo-Nazis. And of course, there are the names that come to mind. There are people who would like to literally shred the Constitution, shred the Declaration of Independence, and our other founding documents, and put in their worldview, which proclaims that they alone have the truth. And ironically, that's what's keeping the fanatics of various sorts worldwide from joining up, because each believe that he, and in some cases she, are in sole possession of an absolute truth, whereas a moderate or liberal, whether religious, atheist, or agnostic, or however they define themselves, will say, I believe this. Yes, a belief can be a powerful thing for good or ill, as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I believe this based on my experiences, and based on my experiences and understanding of history, a democratic system is the best approach to running a society, and having a dialogue is crucial, whereas your fanatic in Afghanistan or Alabama or China or anywhere else who decides that I have the sole truth is unwilling to hear the thought that anyone may have the sole truth. At the best, they might look at someone else who makes a similar claim from a different viewpoint as, shame this person isn't part of my group. Pity I can't convert him or her. And whereas, how would I say it? As much as I might disagree with a lot of political figures out there, I personally don't wish them ill. Okay, I may joke that if you gave Mitch McConnell an enema, he might actually vanish into a singularity, but... again, I don't believe political violence is the way to go. Rather, we have a dialogue and we have to get out there, and it's up to us, particularly when we don't have major media outlets to deal with. Sometimes we forget that politics is a ground game, as is activism. I mean, consider Cold River Mountain Watch. I mean, not much of a budget, but people have work their tails off to get things done. Why? Because they believe in the power to change minds. And when we do choose to change our hearts and minds and get through to people, that can be powerful. The thing is, we don't know the moment. It may seem that we're laboring in the dark, but there's been many other times others have. The people who founded the NAACP about a century ago, many of them knew they would not live to see something like the Voting Rights Act, but they labored.
And that is in the nature of most social change work. You do not enter into it thinking we're going to win day after tomorrow. I mean, the last speech that Dr. King gave, he made a direct reference to Moses and said, I may not cross over to the promised land, but I have seen it, and we will get there.
As a people, as a nation,
right,
and I would add, as a world. And this is why I have hope in the long run, because Here is what I have noticed about the zealots. They seem to be growing increasingly desperate because it seems like they are being increasingly rejected. If you try coming across to many young people today and try selling the arguments that were commonly used when I was born nearly 50 years ago, they'd say, wait, why are you hating on these people? They haven't done anything to me. Go away. And this is why I have hope in the long run. Generationally, I think we have hope. The next few years may be rough, but we can do things such as organize, try to find people we can support locally, at state, and yes, even federal level, and realize we are not powerless.
And we can learn from the past, too. I've never forgotten since the first time I read T.E. Lawrence's Seven Pillars of Wisdom, Will. He describes Wahhabism, and he said, and he's writing from the perspective, it's the 1930s, and he's writing about his experience in the teens during the First World War in the Arabian Peninsula, and he says every few generations, fundamentalist Islam rises like a tide until it crashes upon the shores of modernity and has to recede again. And I think we just happen to have been born into one of those times when that tide is rising. The problem, and I can't say this enough, and I cannot say it strongly enough, the problem is not Islam. The problem is fundamentalism. The problem is not Christianity. The problem is fundamentalism. The problem is not Judaism. The problem is fundamentalism. The problem is not Hinduism. The problem is fundamentalism, because every religion has its sect that is horrified, terrified, absolutely confused by whatever passes in that time for modernity.
Exactly. I mean, we can go back to Hillel and Shammai when Jesus of Nazareth was not even born yet, and there were already debates.
It's pretty obvious from the part that our side wrote and you guys don't much read. It's pretty obvious that at the very least Yeshua was taught by somebody that Hillel taught.
Exactly.
And it's obvious that Paul was taught by somebody that Hillel taught.
Right. As a matter of fact, someone I interacted with for many years online, and I should is a site where he is, just to say hello. Hello, this said that if you were to describe Jesus of Nazareth in terms that his contemporaries would understand, he would probably be called a Pharisee of the Hillel school with some Essene influence.
Yeah.
And consider,
you may not have been listening the other night, but we had this involved discussion because I was trying to remember the name of a town in Iowa, which is Elkader.
Elkader.
Right.
Yep.
Go and read up on him. Now here is a man who led a determined insurgency against the French, but wound up becoming a friend of the French and retired to Damascus, where when violence broke out between the Maronites and the Druze, he took in and saved the lives of thousands of Christians.
Right.
It is not unheard of. In point of fact, and I think this needs to be said, Will, I've watched and read about all of this in the last few days, and I understand what Kate was saying at the beginning of the program about, 12 people being murdered, and there's thousands dying, trying to cross borders, living as refugees in Syria. I get all that. But I think it has to be said here that the United States owns a hell of a lot of this. A lot of this is because of actions of the United States. It's because of the actions of the United States in the 1920s. It's because of actions of the United States in the 1940s. It's because of actions of the United States in the 1950s, the 60s, the 70s. And you know what? In many ways, you can say this relative to Islam without even mentioning the Balfour Declaration or the Mandate or the creation of Israel. That's a different topic. But just the way that we have treated the Muslim world outside of the outside of any issues relative to Israel has been awful. Look, we didn't Israel stayed out of George Bush's war for the most part.
Right.
Okay. But the fact of the matter is, whether it be ISIL, whether it be eight people were killed in Baghdad today in a bombing. And how many were killed yesterday in a bombing? And how many were killed day before? Every bloody death that happens in the land between the two great rivers is on George Bush. It is on Dick Cheney, Will. We own it. The first time, if what we are being told in the for-profit media is to be believed, the first time one of these two brothers in France who were French-born, French citizens, for God's sakes, the first time that they came to the attention of French authorities was 10 years ago, 2005, when they were trying to recruit, when this one kid, one young man, who would have been in his early 20s then, was trying to recruit other Muslims to go to Iraq and fight the United States. We became a magnet. We became a creator. We became a watchword for the promulgation of radical, violent, so-called jihadist Islam. We did that, Will. We did that. And we've got to come to terms with it. We've got to take ownership of it.
There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq before Saddam Hussein was put down. Whenever Hussein encountered someone of that stripe, that person would be quietly, or not so quietly, eliminated because he was utterly terrified of what they could do. And what we have now in Iraq is not just Colin Powell's analogy of a bull in a china shop. Instead, it was more like a bulldozer in a china shop. Possibly, if we had left things well enough alone, Saddam's sons, after his passing, would have ended up fighting with each other, and perhaps Iraq would have split, but not perhaps as violently as it has now. Because as things stand, one could argue Iraq is now more of a geographic term than a country.
Well, it's not a country. It's damn near not even a it's an ill-defined idea. It's an idea that has no independent reality outside of what it was before we destroyed it. You know, I remember when Colin Powell talked about the Pottery Barn rule. You know, if you broke it, you fix it. And I remember way back then saying, and that turned out to be apocryphal. It didn't really, but I remember saying back then, no, the Pottery Barn rule is if you break it, you pay for it, but you don't. They don't ask you to sweep up the broken shards of the pottery. They don't ask you to sit there with some goddamn super glue and try to put the pot back together again. In fact, no, they specifically ask you to get the hell out of the way and quit making trouble.
Right, and I mean, here's the whole point. Essentially, the situation we have now with Iraq is every festering wound that had been perhaps papered over by dictatorships of various sorts, or by regimes that exist, governments that existed before Saddam came to power, has now been not only ripped open, you've had salt, gasoline, and fire put into those wounds. And this will be continuing for a long, long time, and the historical memory of that region is quite long, as people in Baghdad still remember culturally the sack of that city by the Mongols.
Right. Yes.
And this is why I think what may ultimately save us from the conflict of civilizations that some long for is dialogue. And if we make the effort to try to understand and to talk, and hopefully we can find some common ground regardless of what we believe or not believed. I think it was a year ago or longer I mentioned that after the Holocaust there was a writer, I think a very orthodox Jewish writer, who argued that regardless of what we believe or not believe, perhaps we could at least come to some sort of common moral ground saying these are things that definitely cross the line. I'm afraid as a civilization, as a species, we haven't come there yet, but we can hope.
I think we can hope, but I think we also have
and we
to...
we can work for it.
But Will, I think we also have to guard against something, because there is a time coming, and you know, I'm not going to start... I don't need anybody to pass me a snake or any strychnine, and I don't feel like rolling on the floor, but I feel really comfortable saying this. We are, as a nation, approaching a point where, for a variety of reasons, the rest of the world is going to look at the United States of America and say that we have got to be brought to heel. We have got to be reined in. You know, were it not for the fact that we're the United States and we've got nuclear weapons pointed at everybody else on the planet, you know, I think it could be argued that the world might have gone to the United Nations and said, look, what they're doing in Iraq's got to be stopped. But of course, we do have nuclear weapons pointed at the entire world, and so and we also have maybe something more effective than nuclear weapons pointed at the entire world. We have a gun to the world economy's head. So if we want to be idiots and go and kill millions, because see, we're past a million. George, you know, the notches on George Bush's pistol grip are way past a million.
Yes, I mean,
and the same thing for Dick Cheney. And whether, see, I can see a future when climate change begins to get really out of hand because the United States has single-handedly stopped the world from dealing with it. I can see a time coming when the world says, "All right, we're going to stop the United States." Do I want that? No. I want the United States to enter into a civilized dialogue and civilized conduct and behavior with the rest of the world community. But as long as there's a dollar to be had in hydrocarbons, you know, never mind the stars and stripes, let's just turn the flag of the United States into a big bloody red field with a black goddamned oil derrick in the middle of it.
Well, as long as you put a dollar sign somewhere in there, I think that'll actually...
Yeah, we'll over... Well, what it is the vertical parts of the oil derrick will be the two bars through the S of the dollar.
That should work.
Am I just out there? I mean, is it Thorazine dart time for Bob now?
Not yet. I was going to say what is needed is for those of us who do want to prevent that dystopian future to take a stand and get the word out. And if I may go back to an earlier theme, that's another good reason to work with support outfits like the Horn, support efforts in your community and elsewhere. Because in the end, I think it all has to begin at the local level, and we build from there. It's up to us to build a future, even if we don't think we're going to see it. Even if we know that I'm planting a tree today, I know I'm not going to eat its fruit, but someone will.
I think it's actually an old Muslim proverb that the measure of hope is an old man planting an olive grove.
Yes, I have heard that. And there's, of course, the old Talmudic story about a man being asked by someone, why do you, old man, plant that carob tree? Because you will not live to see its fruit. And I say, I plant this tree because others will enjoy its shade and fruit even when I am gone. Perhaps they will think of me, and I will know that I have done some good even as I pass from this life. Perhaps that's the best we can hope for as humans. But
well, right, and things like climate change or our military adventurism around the globe, our addiction to hydrocarbons, the fact that we are largely governed by the military-industrial complex, all of these things are worthy of people's activism. Because they expect to see it come to fruition in their lifetimes, but because you are acting on behalf of and in the name of generations as yet unborn and undreamt of.
Exactly. I mean, we are the caretakers both of our past, but we are the stewards of a future we will not see, but that we can hope will be better than our present and better than our past.
Yeah, one of my little ambitions is to try to live my life in such a way that because I know enough of my family history that I, by virtue of the fact that I'm largely agnostic to all religion, I believe that memory is eternity. And that's just a belief. It's not a fact. But so I make a point of knowing at least a little bit about my ancestors, and I try to keep them alive in the memories of my children, and eventually, hopefully, in the lives of my grandchildren. And I try to live in such a way that the people who don't know about me yet, because they haven't been born, won't spit on the damn ground at the mention of my name.
Right, right. And that's something for us all to think of. Well, Bob, I should let others come on, and hopefully we'll see you getting out of that hole tonight. And let's remember, folks.
Well, Thomas. By the way, Thomas did just take a chunk out of that hole, and we are down to we are down under $200 to go. I think we are at $165 to go for the evening.
That's great. That's great. So let's remember, whoever we are, however we define ourselves, let's all remember our common humanity and work to build that future where one day it will be said of those who lived in our time, yes, there were many people who were embarrassments to their cultures, their faiths, to humanity itself. Yet there were those whose lives, no matter how brief, shone like diamonds in the starlight and helped guide the way to a better future.
Hear, hear, amen, amen, and amen.
Indeed. Be well, and let's hope for a great year for the Horn and for all of us.
Thank you, Will. You have a good evening. Stay warm, for heaven's sakes. I feel like a real wimp sitting here complaining about it getting down to zero last night, knowing what you were in.
Well, let's say, Bob, I have not seen any wandering bands of Yeti begging for shelter yet. Maybe next week.
All right. Take care, Will. Bye now. Our buddy Will from Chicago with a lot, and Will always brings thoughtful observations to the conversation, and sort of, well, he, like everyone else, is a living definition of what we mean when we say conversation radio. This is the kind of thing that can happen when conversation takes place in goodwill and good faith, with an eye toward understanding where we are and where we would like to be. Lines are open, by the way. One line is. Let's see. The Gizmo line is busy at the moment, but the other line, 304-574-8178, as well as Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, those are both open if you want to jump on, and be a part of the conversation. Before I go back to the phones, I want to mention something to you. Our very own News Ninja Carol Baker just let me know that she has gone to press, as it were. She publishes her thoughts at HereWomenTalk.com, H-E-R-E, WomenTalk.com. And I have, in the course of conversation, because I'm a multitasker, I have perused what Carol has published, and you need to go forth promptly and read it. The title of the piece, I Would Rather Die on My Feet Than Live on My Knees. And it consists of reflections on Carol's part on what it means to live in a pluralistic society that tolerates, no, that doesn't tolerate, but that embraces freedom of expression. And also, unlike the chicken shit for-profit media, Carol also reproduces some Charlie Hebdo covers, I suspect as an act of both affirmation and defiance. Go and read it. Hear Women Talk, HEREWOMENTALK.com. HearWomenTalk.com. Carol Baker, I Would Rather Live on My Feet Than Die on My Knees. Just a second. I'm putting a link in the chat room even as we speak. And I'll put it on my Facebook page and post it at the Horn page after the program if no one else has by then. Back to the phones. I think we've got Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know, man?
I was just profound nightmare to come across to you.
You know, we get a little profound once in a while.
I know. I mean, just what's his name right before, and then the little Carol Baker thing. Gonna have to look that up, and then citing Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. It was just you just don't get that on regular talk radio or
that's not going to be today. Yeah, there's not going to be. My friends today on the EIB network, Bill Hicks on freedom of expression. Give me another pill. No.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to, I'm kind of like you. I think it's getting close to, like, the door's closing for us to do a lot of things, particularly environmentally.
Well, nature, as we have been told, and I think it was our buddy Grant, Mr. Gibson, who pointed us toward the blog, and the blog is well worth the read. Nature bats last. Nature does bat. Nature gets the final say so, and we are approaching a point at which, no matter how loudly or how often the likes of Jim Inhofe hollers that climate change is a giant hoax, the climate's going to change on his ass. And maybe, Jim, I'm a little bit wrong in that regard, because one of the problems, as I've pointed out in the past, is the short lifespan of human beings.
Right.
If we lived a little bit longer and could actually see the fruits of the stuff that we do, come to full ripeness, maybe we wouldn't be as idiotic as we periodically are.
But I think also you have to be the humanity, particularly those who have a lot, the wealthy, would have to realize that what she's saying, no man is an island, that they are not an island. Maybe they're living very high off the hog, but that has a price on not just society, but them, no matter how rich or how big their ivory tower is.
Yeah.
You know, it's, how are you going to get that across to them? You know,
And that's the that's the nature of the struggle and the race against time in terms of the climate that we're up against right now. It is unreasonable to think that Jim Inhofe is going to live long enough to see climate change really, really start busting ass. Even though we're seeing it start, but see it in such a way that it'll mean something to him. Never mind the fact that there are more Force 5 tornadoes blowing through the God-fearing, Bible-believing Christian communities of Oklahoma than before. Never mind the fact that Oklahoma and Texas are experiencing are experiencing earthquakes where they didn't experience them before. He's not going to live long enough, or and in fact, I guess there's nobody's going to just, you know, start shouting at him and demand that nobody pay attention to him anymore, because he's got enough money to compel some people's attention. So that's part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, it's just because, I mean, and I'm wondering, like you mentioned the earthquakes, these are minor earthquakes. You know, these are 6.1, 7.1. I mean, I've been through two earthquakes in my life, one in Vegas, one in Seattle. Well, there was only, it was 5.1. And that's not too bad. Those weren't bad. And those definitely weren't, what's the word, catastrophic. In fact, they're almost kind of fun in that, you know, it's weird to feel the earth shake. But, you know, you keep on going up the Richter scale. But, you know, can they get dangerous and deadly? And I wonder if that's going to happen in, you know, Texas Stan, Oklahoma Stan, where they're having them, and if that will be enough to wake them up, you know, that maybe, you know, if they'll, you know, can buy a clue or rent a clue.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you don't know enough about geology if it's going to, you know, just keep on progressing, then next thing you know,
there's some science, but the predictive science for earthquakes is it certainly hasn't approached certitude. But what was said earlier is true. What Bill said, if the New Madrid Fault goes south, that's a horrible problem. And
yeah.
I mean, you know, West Virginia doesn't have earthquakes, except we do now. And you know, the fact that, you know, aren't we fracking somewhere? Don't the hydrocarbon fossil fools want to frack somewhere near Yellowstone? Didn't I read that somewhere?
Yeah, probably. I haven't read, but I think they want to frack everything.
One of the largest super volcanoes in the world, and they want to frack next to it. Ooh, that's real smart.
I just saw a little sign, don't start fracking here, out here in, you know, Louisiana, Stan, St. Tammany Parish, which surprised me, you know, especially because I remember a commercial in the pathetic speech for an election between Andrew and whoever ended up winning. It was that, it was a commercial, and it was basically showing how, promoting how the guy who won, I can't think of his name now, but he was a friend of the oil people. But also the other weird thing about the commercial was that it showed, you know, Louisianans work hard, but the subtext that was that they don't really make much money and they're not able to make any money. That's what I got out of it. And the only way you can do it is work hard and maybe you'll, some, you know, get by. But this guy was going to be the new ray of light to help the state. And but once again, it's just relying on oil, and where we should be transitioning away from it, just like on the governor of California was suggesting that, but here in Louisiana and all across the South, you know, the old Confederacy and numerous other parts around the country just seem to want to live in the past.
Because they're scared to death of the future, and that goes back to the fundamentalism discussion that Will and I had.
Yep. Then you can't bring up a new idea to them because, you know, it's kind of like, it's almost like the proud to be stupid. Well, that's the way my daddy did it. That's the way I'm going to do it. Well, maybe your daddy was an idiot. Yeah. You know, somebody.
That possibility always exists.
mean, I didn't always live in this country. My ancestors, somewhere back down the line, had to set aside not just one, but two groups. Had to decide to come over to this country, I wouldn't be here talking to you on the phone.
Right. Well, that's what I meant about knowing a little bit. Any human being on the planet is a series of random accidents that go back, you know, thousands of years.
Hundreds of thousands, actually.
Yeah.
You know, somebody gets killed off before two people meet and mix their DNA, you don't exist.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. So, well, obviously it can get you it can get you right down the rabbit hole in a hurry. Just got a note, subject line future from our buddy Jenny in Wisconsin. She said, today a snow day from school and tomorrow too. Help. So my daughter and I ventured out to go to the store to get some milk and such. When I was parking the car, we hear a report about the shooting in France. Pierre turned to me and said, what is it going to be like when I grow up? She's 13. One of the hardest questions I've ever had to answer. I told her that it's going to be better because there will be more people that think like we do. She's very progressive, and she's not alone. A huge difference from my school days in the 80s. I have to believe that I have not given her false hope.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I'm, like I say, 2-3 years older than you, and I kind of thought, I remember when Carter, just to jump to when Carter got elected in 76, I thought, you know, things were going to, maybe finally we get a little bit of Tricky Dick, and then it's seven. Then the energy crisis. But he had the foresight to install energy solar panels to set an example for the country. But also, imagine if he could have somehow won and solar energy had gone forward. But there's no way. I don't think the big money oil companies would have let that happen. I'd hate to sound. And I don't mean necessarily a coup d'etat, a violent coup d'etat, but there's other ways to get people out of office, as they did, with the hostage thing, holding just the Republicans saying, look, you just keep these prisoners for another, till the election. And then we'll trade bombs with you. And, those people basically lost over a year of their life. And then combined almost a whole, life, if you think about it, 52 hostages for 444 days. That comes close to 70, 80 years. That's about a whole life. I mean, that's a horrific crime if you think about it.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
So I'm going to let you go.
All right. You have yourself a good evening, Jim. I hope that, I was hearing that Alabama was getting near zero last night.
As far as that goes, we're down in the 20s. It's pretty nippy. That's definitely cold down here, and I think it's going down to 20 degrees.
And, in many ways, in places where it doesn't happen that way very often, it's more dangerous than places that are prepared for it.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot more, although people are kind of getting used to it, of course, there'll probably be some poor fool who learns the hard way.
Well, stay safe and stay warm, Jim. You take care. We'll talk soon.
All right.
All right. Bye now.
See you later.
And back over to the other line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Well, what's happening, Jim?
Not a whole lot. It's chilly, or as been said earlier, it's pretty chilly a lot of places. And there it is, and there you have it, our weather.
Well, over your way, you guys got hit with a lot more snow than we did here.
Yeah, we did. Absolutely. Absolutely. I did hear your last caller mention a phrase, no man is an island.
Yeah, John Donne.
Right, and I have something I'd like to read to you, if I may, please.
Go ahead.
And this is from John Donne, Chapter 17, Meditations. All mankind is of one author, and when one man dies, one chapter is not torn out of the book, but translated into a better language, and every chapter must be so translated. God employs several translators. Some pieces are translated by age, some by sickness, some by war, and some by justice. But God's hand is in every translation, and his hand shall bind up all our scattered leaves again for that library where every book shall lie open to one another.
Most spiritual man, John Donne.
I remember a film I saw called 1884 Charing Cross Road, starring John Bancroft and, Anne Bancroft and Anthony Hopkins, the story of Edith Hump. It's a beautiful story.
Fine movie.
Absolutely. And she would receive a lot of things. And having moved to her one-bedroom sitter apartment in New York at the time in which she lived, there's a scene there when Anne Bancroft recites the very passage I've just read. And that has never been lost upon me.
Donne was a fascinating character because he did that meditative work. And at the same time, he could write some profoundly sensual stuff as well. His poem, The Sun Rising, is gorgeous and at the same time very much in this world.
Oh, absolutely. And moving on to one other thing I just wanted to share. And I won't be very long here, okay?
All right.
And this is a letter I found going through my files today. I periodically do that. And it's a letter that was written to Al Gore, dated, let's see here, 5 April 2002. I'm most grateful for the signed photograph received on 31 March 2001. As I write it, it is being framed and will occupy a special place in my home. Working for you and Senator Lieberman during the fall, I followed the election to the bitter end. The end results were most disappointing, and I'm having a great difficulty emotionally and intellectually accepting past events. As you well know, the eternal sea of politics bathes many shores, adding to one and taking from another. And I am certain that the tide of this sea will carry you, your beliefs, and your family to a better place.
I go back to, and I think a certain generation of Americans will look back on the election of November 2000, Jim, in the way previous generations look at November 22nd, 1963.
That was my point in writing that letter.
Yeah, as a date in which this country inexorably changed. It's almost like a break in a break between possible realities, because the difference in between the road we took and the road we could have been on could not be any more different had the road we taken not been as dark as the mouth of hell, and the one we did not take bathed in bright sunshine.
I concur. And, you know, it was a watershed date in history when that election was stolen, and we went to a different course, a course that has led us in the past, over a decade of wars and absolute horror.
Well, those five geniuses on the Supreme Court, Jim, changed the course of the entire world. It wasn't
and they
had the hubris to say this is a limited scope decision that will be applicable to only this instance. You know, there are more than a million innocent civilians who are dead because of what those five justices did.
Well, they've been dead, and, you know, for a long time, and they're still dying. And there's been a lot of dead on both sides. But I just wonder, could this have been avoided and averted? But there it is, and there you have it. Such runs the course of history. But then again, when you look at history, the French have the saying, plus ça change, quelque même les choses. Everything changes, but it always stays the same. And as far as those people in Paris who were murdered, that is particularly poignant for me today.
And as it is for ever so many people, Jim, and that's why I raised the issue of what happened in late 2000, because this, you know, what happened in Paris yesterday has roots in a decision made in Washington, D.C. in December 2000.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, the only thing I can end is translated from my own French, and I believe it reads, non parlez jamais, pensez y toujours. Never speak of it, but think of it always.
That may wind up being the attitude that history takes.
I'm afraid it is. Okay, that's all I have to add. I know you have some.
Well, by all means, stay warm, and I hope your feline friends are doing the same.
They're perched on their electric blanket.
Well, it got so cold last night that my cat decided that the best place to sleep was next to my head, where I was breathing out warm air every so often. She never does that.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was wondering, I mean, exactly how did you get through? Were you in a sleeping bag?
I have two Arctic rated sleeping bags and a quilt handmade by my mother, a portable propane heater and an electric heater. That just really, I mean, I was okay as long as I was under the covers.
Well, I would suggest you take care of those two items, because they can be particularly dangerous if, the power company's been warning people about a lot of things, you know. It can be kind of dicey if you don't really attend it properly.
Oh, believe you me, I know. And the one nice thing is this electric heater is a year old, and it is one of the more modern varieties. So
very good. Well, listen, you take care and try to get through this cold snap. I think it's supposed to improve or what?
It depends on your definition of improve, Jim.
Yeah, I know.
Let's see. Tonight's,
it's all relative, isn't it?
Tonight's low is 21, but tomorrow night's low is 7. The low Saturday, 16, and then we get a balmy overnight low Sunday of 34, and then it's in the high 20s for the rest of next week.
Wow. Springtime for Hitler. I'll let you go on that one.
I think so, Jim. Have a good evening.
Good
night. Be well. Bye now. Yeah. So we find ourselves at the close of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. I encourage you again to go to Hear Women Talk, HEREWOMENTALK, Hear Women Talk, and read Carol Baker's latest considerations. I would rather live on my feet than die on my knees. You'll be glad that you did. And I also want to send out particular thanks to our dear friend Reinhard for joining in the fundraising effort this evening. It is, well, it's a big deal. We are down, you know how I am with math on the fly. Let's see. We are down to only $115 to go for the evening's fundraising, and that took that was a very big deal on the part of you, Reinhard, and we thank you very kindly, as well as thanks going this evening to Ryan and Mary and Joyce. The four of you have made this evening's program possible, and it is much appreciated on behalf of the entire Horn Family Commune congregation. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. I hope you will all join in for a merry and rousing conversation. And, oh, wait, I neglected, I almost made a terrible mistake. So we're down to $65 to go for fundraising this evening, thanks to Thomas as well. So, yes, the evening's program brought to you by Ryan, Mary, Joyce, Reinhard, and Thomas. Thank you all very much. And thanks go out to all of you for joining in, spending your precious finite time for these conversations. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.